Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 74 of Season 5 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1990 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard 2, Die Harder, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again is, wait a second, I forgot who this is. It's something from the Forgotten Film, Todd from the Forgotten Filmcast. Welcome back to the show, Todd.
Yes, it's just the films that you're supposed to, they're supposed to be forgotten, not the
host. I'm supposed to forget the film? Or I'm supposed to forget.
No, you're supposed to have been forgotten, and now we're remembering them. It's marvelous.
That sounds like a line from When Harry Met Sally. You know, that's friends that we've forgotten that we need to remember, but we don't remember that we've forgotten them, or something to that effect.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. So minute 74 begins with Esperanza asking for luck, and ends with a shot of an access grid with lights underneath. So yesterday we ended things with a lot of suspense. The plane with Esperanza, who we only found out earlier this week knows how to fly, is trying to land on a lit runway that they decided to, you know, that is right in front of him to make it much easier for him. And, you know, he, for some reason yesterday, called everyone his godfathers. I haven't figured that one out yet. And today he starts things off by saying, "Wish me luck." And then Stewart's response is really funny because he goes, "Roger Falcon."
Yeah, that guy, Roger Falcon again.
That's right. There you go. Roger Falcon, Sylvester Stallone, as we mentioned earlier this week. But no, it's just a very strange response, you know, because it sounds very mechanical. Robotic or something like that. You know, when someone says to you, "Wish me luck," you say, "Good luck." You know, it doesn't matter, you know, how much you are in military mode, you know, you're not going to then respond, "Roger Falcon." You know, it just doesn't seem to
almost
float.
It's almost like the airplane scenes were filmed way after the other scenes were, which they were.
That's true. That's true. You're saying that he added in "Wish me luck"? Is that what you think?
I don't know. Stewart doesn't believe in luck. You know, he believes in planning, in, you know, his plan. That's what he believes in.
I don't know. So what do you think? You think that it's going to be in the script for him to say, you know, "Wish me luck"? Or do you think that was ad-lib?
We're jumping ahead here, but
no, I'm not going to give you the answer now. You're going to have to wait until the end of today's episode to find the answer. But, you know, I just want to know.
I figured.
I want to keep you and everyone else in suspense. But what do you think?
I'll go out on a limb and say that "Wish me luck" is not in the script.
All right. Well, you there's a
50%. You sent the pages, but I didn't read it. I usually stick to the scene.
I did not. First of all,
going to read the script.
First of all, I did not stick to the script. I just sent you that.
I thought there were script pages in the file.
No, there were dialogue scenes. You know, it's the subtitles.
Oh, okay.
That's what you get there. Now the script, because the script jumps around, it's much more difficult to cut it up and you know, put those files there. And
gotcha.
You know, I want to keep something somewhat suspenseful for you. You know, if you read everything and you already know everything, then you know, what's the point of you even coming on?
Rob's got to be the smartest guy in the room. I know.
Ouch. That is not true. But since you and I are about 5,000 miles apart, I think we can probably say that we are both the smartest men in the room, since we are both in rooms by ourselves.
Yes. The only other things in the room I am in are probably a few spiders because I'm in the basement. So
yeah, no, I just have two computers in front of me. That's all I got. Nothing else here. So yeah, I am the smartest man in the room currently. Yeah, I can definitely say that. But if anyone else comes in here, then I'm at a loss. So yeah. So then we get a shot of Stewart back in the church. And did you notice what is behind him? There is something that is counting up as opposed to counting down. We noticed this a few months ago. Do you know what I'm talking? You see what I'm talking about there? You can see that there is.
Oh, I see it.
Okay.
I see it. Yeah. I don't know what that is.
Right. And it says 91, 54, 02, 03, 04. It's coming up. Now, we saw that when Jess was on, this must have been week, I think she was on week 8. So we were trying to figure out what this contraption is doing, but we weren't able to figure it out. At the time, so episode 36, it said 44, 08. So according to that, I mean, in the movie time, so 38 minutes have passed since we saw that. Okay. Mm-hmm. But if you, you know, take 44 and you add 38, you do not get 91. So, yeah, that doesn't really work.
we're missing
about 10 minutes as to, you know, what it is that they're counting up. Because again, normally you in movies you see these counters counting down. I didn't even think that you could have something that counts up. You know, come on, back to our James Bond discussion from earlier this week. In every James Bond movie, the counter always counts down. I don't think I've ever seen a movie that has a counter that counts up.
Maybe they're timing themselves. They're timing how long the operation takes to happen.
You mean like in Beverly Hills Cop 2, where they have to, you know, 30 seconds, 60 seconds, 90 seconds, and now it's
something
like 92 that. Minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. And somehow we got 10 minutes that we lost along the way.
They're timing themselves to see if they can break their original record from the last time that they took over an abandoned church and then, you know, completely messed up a large airport.
Wow. That's a great,
you know, they want to,
that's great. They want to break their, beat their, they want to have the Guinness record of being able to, you know, take over an airport the fastest.
Yeah, this is an official timer from the Guinness company, and you know, it reports the findings back to them so that it can publish it in the next edition of that book.
Mm.
Do they still print that book?
Do they print it or do they make
it? Guinness Book of World
Records? My assumption is they still print it. They probably do print it.
I remember I got a copy of that once back when I was in grade school. I like won some contest in my class, and the prize they gave me was this paperback copy of the Guinness Book of World Records, probably for something like 1981 or something like that. But
you still have it? Yeah. Is it there with your movie posters of Sheena?
Deep Star Six. Deep Star Six, yeah. I have a Deep Star Six poster. I don't have a Sheena poster. But I would not be at all surprised if I have that in a box down here somewhere, because I have lots of boxes of old things like that from my childhood.
Oh my God, you kept everything.
I would not be surprised. I kept some things. There's other things I go, why didn't I keep that thing? You know?
Well, that's the way it works with everything. Whenever you throw something away that you don't need, okay, the rule is that you will need it within a few weeks after that. And you'd be like, damn, I just threw that away 2 weeks ago. I've been holding on to it for 20 years and I never needed it. Now I need it.
But see, like the things that I want are, you know, the stuff that like long ago ended up in a garage sale, you know, probably because it was like the transition from being a kid to a teenager. And you're like, you're not necessarily thinking that you're going to want these toys someday down the line. Like I remember I used to have, you probably remember this toy. Do you remember there was, there's the action figures. They're like Barbie size of the superheroes, mm-hmm. like from sure. Mego. Okay. Produce those, you know, Batman, Superman, etc. And there was a van, a Batman van, looked like a VW van. Okay.
Yeah, black VW van.
It had this arm on the top with a net that you could like snag the Joker with and stuff. And I had that thing. And I've seen that show up on like, you know, sites and stuff where people are selling it for big money. And I'm going, I had that thing, you know, and I don't have it anymore.
And they're selling yours. Mad.
So
some kid found you.
Probably
yours.
It's the one I had was probably pretty beat up because I played with my toys, you know, I couldn't leave.
I did too. I never understood the whole fact of, you know, leaving stuff in the boxes. I mean, I understand from an adult perspective that they're worth more, but as a kid, the whole point is to play with them. And, you know, that's Toy Story 2 for you. You know, that's the whole idea there.
Yeah.
You know, but hey, Stinky Pete kept leaving his box, so, you know. But he got what was coming to him. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, we have this.
If I had a John McClane action figure, I definitely would not leave him in the box.
So. That's right. And well, especially if you had a Hans Gruber, when you would be throwing Hans Gruber off the 42nd floor of the Nakatomi building every chance you got.
Oh, man. You'd have to. Boy, if they had that back then, I would have been. The house I grew up in, my bedroom was right above the garage. I could open the window and I could walk out onto the roof of the garage, which I totally used to do. And if I had a Hans Gruber action figure, you better believe I would have thrown him off the roof a few times.
Hope that's not another hostage. So in other words, you were a masochist child.
I was not a Sid. Let's put it that way. I was not a Sid, but my toys definitely.
Okay. So you wouldn't blow up your toys, but you would still have a lot of fun with them.
If I blew up my toys, I wouldn't have my
right.
Toys.
Right. No, I realize that, but that's anymore, what,
you know,
but
you know how hard it was to find know? The, yeah, but see, I couldn't do that. Cause like, you know, like my Star Wars figures, you know, my grandma went to every store in the Chicago area trying to find me the stinking Jawa. You know, if I blew up the Jawa, my parents would kill me.
Okay, that's fair. I understand that. You know, now for me, you know, we just mentioned Toy Story. So one of the things that I loved about Toy Story is they had, you know, the army figures. So I used to have the army figures, and I would play with those army figures all the time. Oh, yeah, and the funniest thing is, do you remember in the movie which army figure gets injured?
Oh, it's the minesweeper, right?
That's right. Yeah. And the minesweeper is always the one who would always fall down because the arch
right.
of his feet was never done right.
Yeah.
So he would always tumble over.
And the mine detector thing, you know, the metal detector thing he's holding would break.
Would always break off.
Yeah, always break
off. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Of course. Now I used to give all my characters names, and I would you know place them all over the place, you know, in you know, like sniper positions on the shelves and stuff like that. And then, you know, slowly kill them all, you know, stuff like that. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, I love that level of accuracy that they did with those in that movie. And like another one that comes to mind, I'm getting way off subject here, but you know, in the Lego movie, the spaceman, the bottom edge of the space helmet is cracked. And that happened on those all the time too. And you had the Lego spacemen. I definitely had a few of those sets, and all their space helmets cracked in that same spot.
That's right, because I guess the plastic was just too thin in that spot.
Yep.
Right. Okay. So let's get back to Die Hard.
What? Die Hard?
Yeah. What movie is that? Die Hard 2. I've never heard of it before. And you know, then we see Stuart pick up a gun. Now, do you notice that in the background where we have this timer counting up? So you see, like on the side of, I guess, a pew or something like that, you see the strap of a gun.
Yes.
And you see like a web gear and stuff like that. And he just walks over, picks up the gun, and the gun has red tape on it. We'll talk much later in this movie about the red tape.
I feel
this movie is filled with a lot of red tape.
I feel like this shot is staged in a way to really, you know, draw your eye to the red tape for sure.
That's right.
Because he holds it up and it's just like, hey, look at this red tape.
That's right. And anyone who's ever used a gun knows that you do not put your finger in the trigger guard like he does right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is an experienced soldier. He would not do that. It doesn't matter if your gun is on safety or not. You don't pick up a gun automatically with your finger in the trigger guard. Mm-hmm. Like that. Especially when you're around your own men. And then he responds to Esperanza and says, "We copy. We'll have you in 5 minutes." So, first of all, that's really quick. you know, that they're going to be able to get. Well, next week we'll talk about them getting actually to, you know, the runways, but still, to say that we're going to be there within 5 minutes, how are they going to get over the fence?
Yeah. Well, and it's snowy out there. I mean, it's, I've driven That's in right. snow like this plenty of times, and, you know, unless you're an idiot, you don't put the pedal to the metal. So.
That's right. That's right. So it was 5 minutes. And, you know, as this happens and we see a shot of John, you know, running down the corridor, and he goes, "That's right. We'll have you in 5 minutes." You know, John's a little overconfident here.
Yeah.
You know, there's the, and at this point, all of Stewart's men start packing up their gear, getting ready to go. We see Burke rolling up the map, which made me wonder why he's rolling it up. You know, they had nothing better to do for John Leguizamo and said, "All right, just roll up that map again that you just unfolded a few minutes ago to, you know, or a minute ago to show us, you know, where we're supposed to, where the plane is going to be coming in from."
If he doesn't roll up the map, someone might spill coffee on it, or who knows what they might do. You know,
that's
you
right.
might need that map in a few minutes.
Do you roll your maps or do you fold your maps?
Well, I don't have any maps that would, you know,
that are not on your cell phone.
Yeah, well, I used to have, I was the kind of person who, even once we started to have the technology, my father just trained it in me that you buy an atlas every couple of years, a road atlas, you know. So I was the guy
that you just flip the pages.
I always had the big U.S. road map, you know, road atlas in my car at all times, because you never knew when you might need it. And
that's right.
I kind of stopped that a few years ago, but I did have it much longer than what I probably needed to.
Yeah, I was like that also. I did that also. I used to actually love map reading. I think in fifth grade, I got like a special award for expert map reading. You know, I don't know what, as a fifth grader, I was really reading on maps, but still, you know, but I remember that for me, I always loved maps. You know, drawing them and looking at them. That was one of the reasons I liked D&D and stuff like that. I would draw all these like maps of different areas and stuff like that.
I don't claim to be good at reading them necessarily. Like, you know, I usually leave it to my wife to navigate and such, but I am fascinated with looking at them. I am one of those people that goes onto Google Maps and just pulls up a location and starts scrolling around and, you know, looking at where this road goes and where this goes. And then I go to street level and look at what it looks like. And, you know, look, oh, what's the date on that? Oh, that these images were captured back in 2014. I bet it looks different now, you know, and things like that. So yeah, I find that fascinating.
That's really cool. So you are a map, aficionado?
No, I'm a time waster.
Okay, so you don't have fun with flags or fun with maps, you know?
No, there's no Dr. Todd Liebenau presents fun with flags. No, I don't do that.
fun with maps. Yeah, and then I am
like about 10 episodes away from finishing Big Bang Theory, finally. So.
Oh, really?
I don't watch TV when it's first on, like at all, because I'm always watching movies. But when I signed up for HBO Max, which is now just Max, Big Bang Theory is on there. And so I was like, oh, I've always heard this would be a show I would probably watch. And I've been watching it through, and it's taken me just about a year and a half, but I am very close to the end of Big Bang Theory.
Did you, have you been enjoying it?
I do. I think it's great. Yeah.
Okay. So spoiler, everyone dies in the last episode.
Yeah. Sheldon wakes up and it was all a dream, and
and he's looking at a snow globe of St. Eligius, you know.
Right.
Exactly. And then the shot changes, and we're in the control tower, and we see Trudeau just thinking, and Barnes has binoculars, you know, trying to figure out what's going on.
And then gigantic binoculars.
Yes. Well, come on, you're the control tower. You need to be able to see what's going on in the snow, on the ground, you know, on all the runways. So why not?
And why is it so foggy behind them? That's what I want to know. I mean, it's not like the bad weather's in the control tower.
Because they don't have any real snow. No real snow, so therefore every place will be foggy. You know.
Maybe you're
saying because of the lights. You're saying it's because, the lights. They have the bat lights behind them.
Yeah, you've got, a couple of figures that are silhouetted back there, and it just, it looks foggy in the background there. So I had actually wondered, because again, I know I keep repeating myself, but it had been a long time since I had seen this movie, and I couldn't remember what the control tower looked like from the exterior, and knowing that they had filmed parts of this at the old Denver airport, Stapleton Airport, I wondered if they used the exterior of the Denver control tower, and I can tell they clearly did not, because that's one of the few parts of the old airport which is still standing.
That makes sense.
It's been turned into a restaurant complex.
Then we see John running down the stair, running down the corridor, continuing to run down, and then we see the plane, and first of all, there's tons of steam. They have must have these guys standing on the side shooting steam out at Bruce Willis as he's running down the corridor there. Steam here, steam there.
There's a part
steam
of me
everywhere.
That says there must be something wrong in this corridor. There shouldn't be that much steam.
That's right. you don't need to let off so much steam, folks.
Marvin is slacking off here. Come on, Marvin.
And then we see a shot of the plane beginning to land. And then John reaches a ladder, and then he looks up, and then we hear Stuart saying, "I see your lights, ETA, 90 seconds." Makes me wonder where Stuart is that he says that he sees the lights, because, as we know, this is less than a minute. This is 30 seconds after he said, we'll have you in 5 minutes. And now he's saying ETA 30 seconds. So he somehow truncated, was it 3.5 minutes? In 30 seconds. The special Die Hard space-time continuum.
Fast driver, I guess. Yep.
Yeah, I guess so. Now, did you notice that when John gets to the bottom of the ladder, there's a lot of water that's on the ground there? And then the shot changes, and it looks like he's just standing in a little puddle?
The water threw me a little bit at first because I was like, why is there water? But then I thought, well, it's snowing. It's snowing through the grate.
That's right.
It's coming down there and it's melting. So I get it.
Right. My understand. My concern is the amount of water, not necessarily the fact that there is water. you'd think that there would be some sort of drainage system there that would work really well.
As we've already said, Marvin is slacking when it comes to the steam. Well, he must be slacking when it comes to the water, too.
Apparently. And then John takes out his gun, pulls out the clip, checks that he has bullets in it, and then puts it back in. And then he cocks his gun, which, again, is a little strange that he would do this. But, okay.
That's the plan.
No, it's to show us that he has bullets. and then we see Esperanza in the cockpit, and then John says, "Come to Papa, scumbag." I guess that tagline didn't work as well as the previous one.
No. That's what I was just thinking. I was like, okay, yeah, come to Papa Scumbag. Didn't really catch on.
No, not at all. And then we see Esperanza on approach as the plane begins to get lower down. And then we see the shots of the access grid from outside with light coming out. But at the same time, there's also steam, which doesn't really make much sense. But okay, why not?
I'm telling you, Marvin, come on. Get on that steam problem.
That's right. And that's all we have for this minute. You have anything else for this minute?
No, I think you got it.
All right. So the script is very descriptive. So I'm just going to read through it because it's great here. So then it says, Stewart's voice, we copy, Falcon. We'll have you in 5 minutes. Then McClane says to him, not if I can help it, asshole. He turns and begins to run down the tunnel. In the church, Stewart tosses the command mic to one of his men, throws a weapon over his shoulder, and leads Garber, Thompson, and Khan in a rush out the rear door. Then we jump to the control tower. Reactions as the previous lit runway goes dark and a different one lights up. But didn't we have that already? Even in the script, they had this, it changed. And then it says, interior of Esperanza's plane, wincing against the blowing snow and wind, the general expertly trims his descent. He reaches for a co-pilot's control and sweeps the dead man to the floor, bites down on his cigar. The plane begins to vibrate, but he hums to himself. He's the scum of the earth, but one hell of a pilot. McClane, breathless, reaches the ladder. The grid above him is bigger than a doorway, made of heavy industrial steel. Radio voice, I see the lights. Wheels down, 5 seconds ETA. McClane checks his pistol clip with a snap. Come to Papa, you son of a bitch. And he flies up the ladder. So, yeah. Okay. That's an interesting way to describe it all. I love the idea that it says he's the scum of the earth, but one hell of a pilot.
He's on the scum thing in this scene.
Apparently.
He's the scum of the earth and he's a scumbag.
Well, in the script, he doesn't use the word scumbag. So, because he says, come to Papa, you son of a bitch. Yep. So, yep. All right. So, every Thursday, we have a segment called Aviation Thursday, where my guests will give their top 5 movies about airplanes, airports, something that's related to aviation. So what have you got for us, Todd? Start with your number 5 okay. And work your way up.
So number 5, I went with United 93.
Ooh, I love that movie.
It's a great movie. It's difficult to watch.
It's very difficult movie. To watch, but I've seen it so many times because it's just so, yep. It amazes me so much.
Yeah. Number 4, I went with one that I actually covered on my podcast years ago. Could be considered a forgotten film for sure. And that is Zero Hour.
Ooh. I had a feeling that that's what you were going to say when you started saying that. I actually saw that this year also. You know, it made me appreciate Airplane even more.
Yes, yes. Number 3, Con Air. I mean, we have a number of friends that would probably kill me if I didn't say Con Air, but Con Air is just loads of fun, so I had to include Con Air.
Shout out to Jay and Mark of the Con Air pod.
Absolutely. Number 2, I cheated, but I did this by the same way, you know, when we did top Bruce Willis films, and I was only allowed to say one Bruce Willis film, but to me, it kind of encompassed the role of John McClane in general. Well, that's what I'm doing with my number 2, and that is the airport franchise.
No franchises. Pick one.
Oh, then I'll go with the first one just because it's the best one and it's with a best picture nominee and stuff. But the other ones are lots of fun too.
Not 79.
George Kennedy is the John McClane of that series.
79 what? Is terrible.
It is terrible, but it's fun.
Okay.
And then my number 1, you already mentioned it. It's the remake of Zero Hour, but as a comedy, and that is Airplane! Exclamation point.
All right, great. Thank you very much for that, Todd. So, Todd, do you want to once again tell people where they can find the Forgotten Filmcast?
So, yeah, the podcast is the Forgotten Filmcast. You can find that all the places you find your podcasts. The blog is Forgotten Films. It's at forgottenfilmcast.wordpress.com. And my Twitter is at Forgotten Films, films with a Z.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. And you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. So, Todd, do you feel like coming back in tomorrow to finish off the week with us and see what happens with John climbing up this ladder?
Yes. We'll do it one more time.
All right. Excellent. So, until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Come to Papa, scumbag. Oh. No, sorry. Yippee-ki-yay.
Yeah, it doesn't work as well. Doesn't work as well.
No, sorry. Doesn't roll off the tongue.
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little villages here and